And right now, we are joined on the phone by Dr. Deb Strohman to talk sports as we begin this hour. Dr. Strohman, thanks for being with us. And actually, we want to end up wanting to talk about basketball with the Final Four coming up. And I see some big moves in ACC coaching, women's basketball Final Four coming up as well. But I actually want to begin by talking about football, because we got the news earlier today that UNC football has agreed to a three-game football series with Liberty, with games in 2024, 2028, and 2031. And I just want to take a moment with you and just reflect on the optimism that, as much tumult and turmoil as there is in the world, UNC football is still making plans for 13 years from now. So they at least think that everything's going to be okay.
Well, there's no doubt that when you have teams that come in and play in your stadium, or you do a contract with the team that clearly on paper does not match up, that's the type of game where you're actually just, it's a financial transaction.
Yeah.
And for many, many young people, they feel that this is where you have an example of exploitation. For the undermanned team, so to speak, they come in and they generally get slaughtered. But the athletic department walks away with $700,000. And then you use that to upgrade your facilities, to bring in more talented players through recruiting. That's a big win for you. For the other team that is supposed to do the slaughtering, you're the Goliath. You generally get a W, which helps towards bowl eligibility. And then also you have the opportunity to run some different offenses and defenses. So you're getting more experience against an opponent versus beating up your own team during practice. So it's very uncomfortable for a lot of people, but definitely that is a part of big business, big college athletics. And we see it in basically basketball and basketball and football.
Yep.
So Carolina's just like any other school, just trying to compete, trying to pay the bills, trying to draw more people to Keenan Stadium, because we are truly a part of Tobacco Road, which means ACC basketball.
Oh, let's turn to basketball now. And you mentioned David versus Goliath in the football world, but we got the Final Four coming up. You've got Kansas and Villanova on one side of the bracket, Michigan on the other, a three seed, but an elite team from the Big Ten that's made it to the national championship game fairly recently, won in 1989. And then you got Loyola Chicago, the interloper, coming in as an 11 seed, and pretty much everyone will be rooting for them one way or the other heading into the Final Four this weekend, I think.
Well, they're definitely going into rare air. Most people will say that Villanova-Kansas game is the final game. That winner will go ahead and take the trophy home, whereas Michigan and Loyola-Chicago are more or less the underdogs. It's interesting, Missouri Valley, I don't want to say squeaking in, because now we've seen over the years that these mid-major teams, especially the ability to keep your juniors and seniors. So they might not have as much talent, but their chemistry is just outstanding. And they understand that it really makes a difference to make that extra pass. And so they continue to show up in the Final Eight and the Final Four. But the Missouri Valley Conference is just elated about this, to be able to compete with these power conferences and get to showcase Loyola Chicago and their school. Loyola Chicago is the largest Jesuit school in the nation. I don't know if people knew that. So they have a very, very big following, similar to Notre Dame with its Catholic following. But the other thing that's noteworthy about this Final Four is that since 1987, to win the national championship, you have to have a one-and-done player on your team, as in someone who is going to be drafted in the NBA first round. 1987, it was Steve Alford with Indiana, and arguably people can say it goes back further than that, because he was a late, late first round pick. And as we all know, he did not pan out in the NBA. So not sure if Michigan has that NBA player that can be a first rounder in a few weeks or a few months. Loyola definitely doesn't have one, and Villanova and Kansas definitely have players. So all eyes again point to the Kansas-Villanova winner to win the championship.
So are you going along with that? That's the historical trend. That's what everyone's thinking. Are you suspecting maybe the winner will come out of that other side of the bracket?
My brain says yes, definitely Villanova or Kansas. My heart says I just love the way Loyola Chicago is playing right now with that chemistry. This might be too tall of a task, though, to go against a Michigan because they're playing well. They've had a chance to really scout Loyola Chicago, and that stadium, even though I believe most people for the other teams will be cheering for Loyola Chicago, but just the coaching staff of Michigan and their ability to play above the rim, it might be a tough task for Loyola.
I do really appreciate, and you're kind of seeing this with Loyola now, but they're certainly not the only team, the extent to which, and this will happen every so often, where we often think about college athletics and college academics is in some ways at odds with each other, and you get that kind of push and pull, but when the athletics program for a school becomes prominent or is prominent, that shines the spotlight or gives the school an opportunity to shine the spotlight on academics success or success in other areas of college life. So Duke University has more of a name in people know more about Duke's academics, as great as it is, because the basketball program is so good. Stanford's success gives them a little bit more name recognition that they might not otherwise have. Notre Dame, same thing, and we're seeing it now with Loyola Chicago. And not to bring up bad recent memories, but we saw it recently with UMBC, right? That this is a really, really great academic school that people didn't necessarily know was a great academic school. Now they know more because of that game.
And you are spot on. And that's why there's such a controversy around big-time college sports. But when you sit with the senior administrators, the chancellors, the presidents of these universities, that's why most of them absolutely want to have a prominent athletics program. You're not going to be able to draw people, and I'm talking about 25,000, 75,000 people to a concert or a history lecture or some other prominent academic program that's just amazing, but you just can't draw the numbers. And the reason why you're drawing the numbers is because you want people to become attached to your university. You want alumni to remember the good times or to create new memories so that they will give, so that they will become a part of the university development program and they'll write their check every year. But there's no other institution or system at these universities where you can really leverage bringing people together in a very oftentimes fun way around sport and watching young people compete. The challenge is for some universities is that the athletics is now outshining the academics. And so that's why there's a pushback. But most people would agree that it's worth it to have 500 to 800 athletes on your campus, most of them that are doing very well academically. And then you have another group that goes to the next level where they're receiving media attention, national, international media attention. But if that means you can stick your university's logo on the front of their uniforms or on their equipment, it's definitely worth it.
Speaking with Dr. Deb Stroman. So let's turn to women's basketball because the Final Four is set there as well. And a lot of people who sort of tangentially follow women's basketball think of it as probably UConn and three other teams, but it's all four one seeds this year, right? UConn and Mississippi State and Louisville and Notre Dame, and all four of those teams are terrific.
That's right. And unlike the men's competition, you do have the benefit of the Power Five and all the money and resources. So very rarely will you see a mid-major compete beyond Sweet 16. But in terms of our support, well, here's the competition where you have two ACC teams. Notre Dame has been a powerhouse ever since they came to the ACC. They've won all but one of the ACC tournaments. And Louisville has stepped up. Coach Jeff Waltz, he's done a good job, and he won the ACC tournament this year, and now they're competing for the national championship as well. But the story goes, it's all about UConn. They've had seven undefeated regular seasons, which is just unheard of, and they're going for their 12th national championship. So Coach Ariyama, everybody will be on UConn to win it all. They're definitely the favorites. They knocked off their big rival, South Carolina, who won it last year with Coach Dawn Staley. Now, some people will say that this is the toughest year for UConn because they had, now listen to this, Aaron, they've had only three single-digit wins this year. So now they're saying that UConn is a bit more, you know, they can lose, but they're just running through the tournament. And again, the jury is out as to whether or not this dominance hurts or helps women's basketball.
So let's actually talk about that, because we kind of touched on that last time we talked about the tournament and UConn. The obvious comparison on the men's basketball side is UCLA winning all those championships in the 60s and 70s. And men's basketball, after UCLA's dominance came to an end, was, I think, in a much sort of better and more prominent position than it was before. What's the comparison between UConn and UCLA? Is UConn more dominant now than UCLA was on the men's side? Are there other points of comparison there?
Well, it's definitely hard to compare, because back then you had your conference tournament champion, they would get to go to the tournament.
Right.
And so today you have all these opportunities. You could, in some conferences like the ACC, you could be just above 500 and you're going to go to the tournament. So some people would argue that UCLA's competition wasn't as tough, taking nothing away from the great, great John Wooden and the talent there. But you just didn't have as many opportunities to possibly lose. Also, the number of games being played and injuries. But I believe the difference today is the media. I think you can't compare football and Alabama's dominance. You can't compare golf with Tiger Woods' dominance, or even men's basketball, because women's basketball, we don't have that great market. Mm-hmm. We don't have a lot of media coverage. In fact, I was just Googling today to find out more about Mississippi State. And if you can only go to Mississippi State's website and learn about what they're doing, because they're following their team, and ESPN. And that was more on the ESPNW side. And so when you have a certain amount of eyeballs looking at women's basketball and they constantly see UConn, that's a tough pill to swallow. It's just basically plug and play for Geno. Not only is he arguably the best X and O's coach, but he's also he has the best recruiting staff. And so it's so very hard for people to stay engaged with women's basketball. Unlike some of the other sports where you have to do a lot of storytelling in the national mainstream to create fan base, I don't see that. We don't see the compelling stories of the Notre Dame players or even Carolina or Duke players with women's basketball. It just doesn't get the national attention.
Speaking with Dr. Deb Stroman, and I got to wrap up here in a second, but before we do, back to men's basketball really quick, because there's a coaching development in the ACC. You mentioned this in the last couple of days. Art Chansky's notebook was about it earlier today. Jeff Capel, Duke assistant, heading over to Pitt to become the head coach there and start this big, big rebuilding project at Pitt, which was a really prominent top 10 school not that long ago and really tanked last year. So what does that move mean for Capel? What does it mean for Pitt? What does it mean for Duke?
Well, it's great for the ACC, because now you create another storyline. Jeff Capel leaves Duke. Some people consider he was the heir apparent to Coach K. But something happened. Either Coach Capel said, you know, he was told that he's definitely not going to be the next one and it's not guaranteed, or he didn't want to wait. He said, you know, I can get a multi-million dollar contract, because Pitt football is pretty good. You're in a town that just loves sports, and he's a big Steelers fan. So it's a win-win. When you go to schools where there isn't a lot of pressure for basketball, he can be pretty decent, and that's good in the ACC, and he could come across as just being a winner. And maybe after 3 or 4 years, if Coach K, whether it's due to medical reasons or he decides after winning another championship or two, that they're looking in terms of who to bring back, then it's not hard. Now, the challenge will be going from one ACC school to the next. That's always problematic. But I'm happy for Jeff. He gets to follow in his footsteps of his father again, taking over a program from Oklahoma. So I just think it's a big win, but the concern for Duke is minimal at best. People thought that when Johnny Dawkins left that the recruiting would fall apart. You know, Jeff Capel was instrumental in bringing in a lot of these one and done. But for Coach K, he's got a system. He's got the brotherhood going, and players will continue to want to go to Duke and play, whether it's for 1 year or all 4 years. And plus, of course, they get a great education.
Again, Dr. Deb Stroman, UNC, got the Final Four coming up in just the next couple of days. Thank you so much. Looking forward to it.
Thank you.